Dead Rat Pizza is intended for an adult audience.
Dead Rat Pizza may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm hungry.
Me too.
Let's make a pizza.
Okay.
From New York City.
This is Dead Rat Pizza.
Who doesn't love pizza?
Don't stop, make it pop. DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'ma fight till we see the sunlight. Tick-tock on the clock, but the party don't stop. No.
Welcome to Dead Rat Pizza. I would say welcome back, but for many of you, this is probably the first time. I killed the no-name anime show. I'm sorry. This is how out of it I am. I looked at when we did our last show and I was like, oh, it's only been a couple months. It's been like half a year since
we've done.
Yeah. The last podcast we did was in August and it is now February 5th as we record this. I'm JP, joined once again for the first time, I guess, if we're calling this episode one, by Noel and Kyle. How are you doing, Kyle?
I showed up. I'm recording. It's a good time.
Things have changed. You're working. You're a working man now.
Yes, I have one of those jobs where I go in, and then at the end of the week, they give me money.
Nice. Noel, how are you?
I'm doing good. Great to be back in Dead Rat Pizza. I actually lost my job back in December.
Oh, my goodness.
Thankfully, like within like a month of that, I got a new one. So I'm good.
I was going to say you must be working again because we moved the recording around to fit your work schedule.
Right, of course.
Although I have been known to lie about working to get out of doing things. The number I'll get an email that's like, because I mostly work from home these days doing post-production, and I'll get an email that's like, hey, can we have a Zoom meeting right now to talk about the film? And I'm like, ooh, I'm on a film set right now. I can't talk. And I'm just like playing video games. They don't know.
And they're like, what film set? I thought you were on strike.
Yeah, that's a great segue, Noel. The strike is over. The double strike is over. WGA and SAG. I think they were, yeah, they would have both been on strike the last time we recorded, I think.
Right, yeah.
At least WGA, I think, would have been. I don't know all the details about their contracts because I have not read them, but I assume that they are mostly happy with what they got. Otherwise, they would not have voted yes.
Oh, okay.
I assume. I don't know. Work is still slow coming back. I've been on set a couple times, but there's a lot of things in pre-production. But also, you know, the streaming bubble is bursting, so I don't think we're going to be back to 2023 numbers, or no, not 2023, 2022 numbers anytime soon.
It was only a matter of time. It was such a bad bubble.
Well, what was funny is I read an article that was like, you know, the end times are here. In production shows are down 40% from 2019. And I'm like, I wonder what happened in 2019. All of these studios started and were trying to fill their service. So, yeah, things were bloated for a while and it was really great.
Could something have happened in 2019 that would have had a lot of people like not want to produce stuff or together in mass?
I've got that. No, you got that backwards. That's because all
that's
these
20,
all of these studios started. And so they were trying to fill their streaming services. Like Netflix was making a ton of low-budget movies. Apple was still new. Disney was still pretty new. For streaming, I mean.
Paramount Plus was around
Paramount
that time.
Paramount Plus and Peacock. And so there were so many shows that like we didn't have enough union members to staff them.
Ah.
And so now things are leveling back out to where... I don't know. I think it's still going to be fine. It's not going to be as busy as it was, but they're not just going to pack it up, you know? Like,
of course.
These are media companies. They're going to keep making media.
See, my thing with them has always been like, would it have been such a tragedy if you just like produce stuff for platforms that you don't specifically own? Like, would it have been a problem for Paramount to just like produce shows and then send them out to Netflix as opposed to being like, we got to make Paramount Plus for this shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that would have been the better choice for consumers, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everybody wants a piece of the pie.
Right.
Unfortunately. So,
but, like, yeah, my thing is, like, is your piece significantly that much bigger now that you have Paramount Plus and that's where you put your stuff on?
I would imagine that it's probably less people total per service than if they all did it the way that you've suggested.
Right.
It's like, I don't have Paramount or Peacock. We have Max, Netflix, and like free Hulu. And then some anime ones. But like,
you see, I'm a man of the Amazon. I only use Tubi.
There we go. Cool. Yeah.
I think that's the future, man, is these free ad-based ones. Because if they're going to charge us and play ads anyway.
Exactly. I just watched Day of the Warrior on Tubi.
I honestly spend more time watching Sling TV, which is like a $50 a month just streaming version of cable and network television.
Mm.
And I imagine things like that are going to catch on more because it's like half the price of normal cable and it's the exact same thing.
Right.
It's just streaming instead of going through Comcast or whatever. So that's, I don't know, whatever. TV's stupid. I like working on it, but the model of how they make it and fund it is bananas. Speaking of bananas, I have worked on something that's been nominated for Best Sound at the Oscars.
Whoop, whoop. That's great.
Maestro, it's a movie that I don't know if we ever talked about it on the podcast. It's the Leonard Bernstein movie. We did that two summers ago at this point. And yeah, we got nominated for Best Sound. I was going to go to the ceremony, but now I am working during the ceremony. And I was like, hey, boss, would you be mad if I chose to work instead? We just had a year-long strike. So I should really go to work instead of spend money to go to California. And he's like, that's cool. Plus, it's on a movie for him.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, if you're going to go to the ceremony.
That was the plan. But so he's doing the Saturday Night Live movie that's coming out, and the first 2 days are shooting in New York. So he hired me and the boom operator from Maestro to do the New York unit, and then we found somebody to we got to hire the mixer, which never happens. So like the peons got to hire the department head, which is really funny.
Cool.
So we're doing that instead of going to the Oscars. But
now, are they gonna send you like a statue?
I don't think what? I would get one personally. My boss would definitely get one.
That's what I was kind of wondering.
I'm guessing that only the people whose names are in the category get one.
Oh, okay.
So it's all the department heads from sound that would get an Oscar.
See, but I had always thought like if it was a thing like best like special effects makeup or best sound, like what you're for, like the crew would each get one.
No, I think JP's right. I think it only goes to the heads.
I'll find otherwise, out.
Like, I think it would be really hard for, I don't know, like imagine like costuming, you know, or something like that. It's like, oh shoot. Like this person did like needlework on this one dress. They get an Oscar.
We'll see.
Yeah, give her an Oscar.
It would be really cool if we win. He is,
or at least like a certificate. Be like, hey, I did that thing.
Well, we'll find out if we win. He's been nominated a few times and never won, which is a bummer. So he's going in with very realistic expectations that he's going to lose again, especially because, like, we're going against Oppenheimer, I think. And, like,
I see, yeah.
I think that we did the best sound movie, but the Oscars is a popularity contest.
You know? Yeah. And plus, you know, there was the sound of that explosion. There was the sound of Oppenheimer's balls against that lady's chin. So, yeah, like, a lot of.
Yeah, we've got a lot going against us. So here's something insane that's happened. I grappler bocky'd somebody IRL.
Right. I saw that in the notes. So, like, what happened?
So, yeah, what does that mean?
I got mugged on the train and I stood up, looked the guy in the eyes without saying anything, and he gave me my shit back.
Your aura's too powerful, JP.
It is the craziest thing. I was just minding my own business, and he snatched my phone, and I stood up, looked at him, and he handed me my phone back.
He's like, I'm not messing with this guy.
I am not a scary person, but I don't know what willed him. I don't know if he just didn't want to deal with it. It was an interesting situation because, like, if you're going to mug somebody on the train, the best time to do it is at a stop.
Right.
Not in between stops like this guy. So where were you going to run?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what he realized. It's like, oh, shit, I'm trapped.
That's probably what it was.
So, like, yeah. years of consuming grappler baki has paid off.
It has paid off. Yeah, he just handed it back and walked away. And I was like, does this mean I'm from Brooklyn now?
I thought you were talking about the grappler baki episode where with the rock, paper, scissors, and the guy uses scissors to crush his rock fist.
Yeah.
I thought that's what you were talking about. But your story is more exciting. So
no, there's... I don't know which episode or which season it's in, but there's a season of Baki where these, like, delinquents want to fight him, and they have a knife, and Baki just looks at him, and he's like, never mind.
Yeah, isn't that during, like, the convicts? Because I feel like after that, like, that's when Speck shows up, and he's like, hey, Baki, what's going on? I'm going to give you this severed hand.
You know, I think it happens more than once. There's like 150 volumes of Grappler Baki. So something else I did. These are the two things that make me officially from New York now. We found a rat in my apartment, and I now have it as a pet.
There we go. Did you name him Ben, like after the Michael Jackson song?
What'd you say, Noel?
I said, did you name him Ben, like the Michael Jackson song?
There's a Ben the Rat song?
Yeah, it's for like when Michael Jackson was like a kid, he starred in this movie called Ben, where like he finds a rat and like keeps it as a pet. There's a song to accompany it called Ben.
That is such a deep cut.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. I'm like surprised more people don't know this, but yeah.
I mean, maybe they do. I'm gonna get, you know, a Twitter. Or a Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky now.
Yeah, you're going to get
it. How the fuck do you not know about Ben the Rat? A reskeet, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, it was like, I don't know, 11 or 10 o'clock, and my girlfriend's like, hey, I think I just saw a rat. And I was like, that's not possible. Like, there's no way there's a rat. Like, you probably, maybe the cat just, like, knocked a ball or something under the counter. And I went to go investigate where she thought she saw it, and nothing came out. So I'm like, I don't know, but I don't think it makes sense that the rat, because there are rats in this apartment, but we live on the fourth floor, and that's a long way for the rats to go. Because there's rats for sure on, like, the first floor in the basement. But there's not much reason for them to go all the way to the fourth floor. The roaches, on the other hand, they like it up here. But we have defeated them for the most part. And so, like, hours go by, right? She's getting ready for bed. It's 2 in the morning now. I'm mostly asleep, and we hear this like, and she's like, yep, that was a rat. Our cat had cornered the rat in my bookshelf somehow. And after some finagling, we got the rat in a box. And now, two cages later, he's a good little boy, and he loves pizza. And I make him eggs every morning.
Is his name Shredder? Or, sorry, Splinter?
His name is Robin 3, which is a joke that only my mom gets. I had a rat named Robin when I was young, and my girlfriend's name is Robin. So this is the third Robin.
There we go.
But yeah, he's adorable. He lives in a pineapple. We got him this little pineapple hammock at Petco. And he eats eggs out of our hand. It is kind of wild. We have almost domesticated a New York street rat.
There we go.
Apartment rat, please. This is an upscale place.
The only other thing I've been up to is I started a band. I think I started it shortly before the last time we podcasted, because I think we started in May.
Yeah, I feel like you've mentioned starting a band on like some of our earlier podcasts.
We are preparing to record in the spring. Cool. I found a studio in Queens that has done some really good stuff. For those who listen to emo, they recorded Max Seal, Saturdays at Your Place, as well as Osu Osu, which are some... Max Seal's pretty big, and Saturdays at Your Place is pretty big. I don't know how big Osu Osu is, but they're like well-known bands in the scene. So these are people that I trust to do a good job, especially if they're doing it with some of the bigger bands.
Oh, okay.
So I've been in communication with them. The goal is spring, but we need to, you know, we've got some planning to do. We're going to start with two or three songs, and then if we're happy with what we get, you know, we may do a full album with them. Should be a good time.
I've been writing this new joke where because I saw some kind of like Instagram video about a Christian nightclub that's opened in LA. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Christian nightclub sounds like the name of an emo band. Just like one where you could imagine the bassist is the 38-year-old guy who has like a 17-year-old girl who just hangs around him and nobody talks about it.
That certainly sounds like an emo band to me. Right. Yeah, so that's what we've been up to. We haven't played any shows yet, but yeah, it should be fun. I think we're getting pretty close to being able to play shows. Like, we were doing it really casually in the beginning, but the last like month and a half, we've been like a lot more serious about practice and polishing the songs that we have. And we have a second guitarist that is currently in Sweden, so haven't had an in-house session with him yet. But he's very, very good. So I'm hoping that that works out. When I have samples, I will play them. But in the meantime, if anybody wants to follow us online, everything is Unfamiliar. We are Unfamiliar Emo on a lot of social media. I think that's our Twitter, our Blue Sky, as well as we are on Instagram, Unfamiliar Emo, and then Bandcamp is everythingisunfamiliar.bandcamp.com. But yeah, very, very little has been posted so far, but that's where you'll hear about songs when they happen.
Sick. All right.
Yeah. So anime, right? I don't want to only talk about anime on this podcast now, but
right,
you know, that we can't forget our roots. You know, we've been doing anime podcasts since 2008.
Jeez, yeah.
Which is insane. I've been podcasting long enough that I think my podcast could buy cigarettes, depending on what state they live in.
Yeah.
I was on a podcasting so long
that if like your podcast was a girl in the emo scene,
oh god, then they've been aged out.
I was on the podcasting Reddit subreddit
and talking about that. Somebody's like, podcasts have been out since 2008, like longer than that, my guy. Get out of here. But anime. We've been watching Butchigiri, which I found out today is not the first anime to be called Butchigiri in the last couple of years.
Really?
Apparently, the Japanese name for Shine On Bakamatsu Boys is also Butchigiri. But it's spelled differently, and it has a slightly different meaning. Butchigiri, I thought, was a nonsense word, but I think it means like breakthrough or fight on or something. It's like Japanese slang for,
I could see that. Yeah.
I think being excited or something, which makes sense because the guy in it always says it when he's excited.
Being really excited about either fighting or having sex with other men. That's what this show is really about.
It is from the director of Skate the Infinity. And I checked this out because a bunch of people on Twitter were saying that it was the business. And I agree with that assessment.
Oh, very much so. I completely agree as well.
It's loosely based on Aladdin, which I didn't know originally takes place in China. And that's why there are so many allusions to Chinese food.
Holy shit. Learning so much today.
What's funny about the original Aladdin, so I learned this all from Wikipedia, because I was like, this kind of feels like Aladdin, so I look it up. And so Aladdin was not part of the Arabian Nights. It was added later on by some French guy who, despite it still having a bunch of Middle Eastern influence in the writing, takes place in China just because. I assume that guy didn't know anything about China or had never been there and just thought it was the Middle East, because everything else about Aladdin, I think, is what we know of it to have become. It's just in China instead of Arabia.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's still sultans and stuff.
Yeah, that's how a lot of the Arabian Nights stories are. There's a few different texts which they draw from and various translations. Like, I'm literally reading the new translation of it. I'm on volume 3 of 3.
And nice.
But like even that translation doesn't include some stories that others do, and vice versa. So
what an interesting.
You know, they had to borrow from a lot of sources to get to 1001.
Wow.
Yeah, for real.
Mobile suit Aladdin, a new translation.
But, you know, it was funny that somebody, one of the reviews, they're like 3 episodes in and they're like, I'm glad they changed it up because this show is going to get old fast. And it's like,
how did they change it up?
I don't know. Like, are you watching the same show? It's so like, so Butchigiri, maybe Noel will be better describing this because you're our delinquent, what's the word?
I guess connoisseur.
Connoisseur, yeah. Like, you know the most about delinquent anime.
Yeah, so Butchigiri, it's about this guy named Arijin Tomoshibi. He's starting out at this new school, and he's just like, all right, I'm going to get in there, and I'm gonna convince everybody that I'm cool, and that's how I'm going to get myself a girlfriend and finally lose my virginity, because that's what he's focused on. Turns out the school is like a huge ass delinquent school.
Yeah, maybe don't try to get laid at Cromartie High School.
Right, yeah. And everybody's just hard fighting, hard ass, badass delinquents. And then there's just like one single girl who goes to the school.
Yeah.
Which I find very funny.
I never noticed. You're right. She is like the only girl in the whole school.
Right. Yeah. So.
His childhood best friend also goes to this school.
Right, yeah. And there's some kind of tension going on there. We do not know the whole story yet. Because, like, back in the day, they were like, yeah, we're going to train hard to become honky people, which I am not too sure what that means.
I love that they call it honky people, because every time they do, I think... this is the result of these fucking assholes online that's like, I need it to be exactly what it is in the Japanese. They're like, I don't want this to be like spiritual people or genie men. It's gotta be honky people. This is Bleach, and we're gonna go in the Kekkei and fight with Reiatsu.
See, in my perfect world, they would call it honky people, but there would have been like an editor's note at the top of the screen going like, honky is the da-da-da-da-da-da. So
yeah. It is interesting that they never do translation notes in these. I wonder if it's just a limitation or if they do not care. It's probably both.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of like they do not care, and also I think it might just be like anime fans nowadays might get kind of thrown off by that, because I feel like I've heard that as far as like when they translate songs in the subtitles as well, they'll be like, which one am I supposed to be reading?
Oh, no. But Noelle died.
But yeah, so back in the day, they were like, yeah, we're going to train to become tough fighters. And I guess somewhere down the line, they kind of like split off. And now yeah. Arjun is just all about, you know, getting pussy. So yeah, but then one day, Arjun's like, chased down by some delinquents to a shrine where he finds like an old gun and he gets possessed by a genie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like a, like, I don't know what you call it. Like the old matchlock pistols. And he tries to like threaten one of the gang members and he ends up shooting himself in the face.
Yeah. And then the genie pops out and he's just like, Mr. Arjun, sir, what is your pleasure, please, or whatever?
Yeah, and
I forget how the song goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so...
yeah, he says, you ain't never had a friend like me, and then...
he ends up getting super punch powers, and it's... Then he has a stand, I guess. I don't know. It's interesting the direction based on how the fourth episode ended, like where this is going to go. Like, is it going to turn into something like JoJo's or Shaman King where their genies are fighting each other? That's kind of the implication that I got.
I mean, from what I'm seeing, it seems like Arjun's genie and this other guy are the only ones around.
Well, and yeah, then we're only on episode 4.
Of course, yeah. And now everybody's trying to stop like a big gang war from breaking out because we've got the two main factions at the school. They're about to go to war because this third faction is out here trying to like set everybody up by saying like, yeah. "Oh man, the guys from Sigma Squad beat up this dude in the Minato Kai and stripped him naked and hung him up by a flagpole."
It's funny because this reminds me a lot of Tokyo Revengers, but if it was horny and goofy.
Right.
Which I guess, I mean, a lot of the delinquent anime probably have similar stories of rival gangs, and I mean, they probably don't all have horny Ishida from Bleach, but...
I mean, yeah, they definitely do have a lot of, you know, inter gang war kind of storylines going on there. Also, I really love Arjun's mom.
I think she's
very funny. Yeah. Yes.
I'm learning a lot about Chinese food from the mom, or I'm learning names of Chinese food.
Right.
So he like lives above a Chinese restaurant that his mom runs.
Right.
Yeah, I really like it. We're only 4 episodes in, but it's well written, well animated. What else do you want from an anime?
Yeah, seriously.
If you think what we said sounds interesting, then you will probably like it. If you think it sounded stupid, you probably won't.
And it's anime original, so you don't have like dinguses on TikTok going like, "Oh man, this doesn't look exactly like the manga panel."
Oh, what's happening?
Oh my god.
Kyle, you watched an anime called Summer Ghost?
Yeah, it's one that I know we covered in the news back when we were doing the No Name show. It's from an artist named Loundraw, and it's I think it's based on a manga, based on what you said earlier. I've only ever watched this movie. I think
the manga is out. I feel like I've almost bought it before, but I may be wrong.
Yeah, so G-Kids picked it up. It's only 40 minutes, so real short time investment. And what's really interesting about it, so it's about, there's like a, I guess, what's it called? There's a, I guess like a rumor or something in the neighborhood that every summer, if you go to this little area, which is a like a disused runway for airplanes, if you go there with fireworks, then you can see a ghost in the summer, and they call her the Summer Ghost, which, oh yeah, that makes sense. And so these kids all meet together online. They're not from the same high school. They don't know each other. They just met because they all want to meet her for their own reasons. And then they kind of have this extrasensory experience of meeting this ghost and talking to her about death. And then they end up going on a quest with her, looking for something that has been hidden away. And it's so like on a plot level, you know, like it's pretty simple. It's not, I think it's 40 minutes. It's mm-hmm. pretty good. But what I think makes it stand out is how unusual the art style is. Have you guys ever played Hotel Dusk, the DS game?
Oh God, I haven't, but I remember that name. Let me look that up. Was that like same. A visual novel?
That does sound familiar.
Yeah, it was a visual novel. It kind of it had this. It's an anime game style, but it has kind of that Take on Me thing, where the characters are drawn like pencil sketches.
Oh,
okay, yeah, I do remember this. I did not play it though.
So, Summer Ghost isn't entirely like that. It is like the characters are in color for one, and they're not like limited animation, but they do the way in which the artists focus so much on natural light with the backgrounds and the way in which they draw the characters, it does make them feel like you're looking at a like hastily drawn kind of like pencil sketch while they are on like a 3D plane. Mm. And it's really fascinating just seeing how like they do that, but it's so they can focus so much on the lighting. There'll be scenes with sparklers or you know, kind of the natural rays falling through the windows and things, and the way in which it interacts with them, like it's not the kind of thing you normally see in 2D hand-drawn, you know, the anime style. And it's really, really unique. And I think that even if you don't necessarily connect with it on like a plot level, which I think is actually pretty well done, but just like as a pure visual experience, I think it stands out and is definitely worth a watch.
Nice. Okay. I looked up some of the pictures. It looks really cool.
Not to derail or anything, but on the topic of Hotel Dusk, I did a quick Google search just to familiarize myself with it again, and one of the first things that came up was like an hour-long YouTube video that says Hotel Dusk, the game that changed my life. And nice. I just think it's really funny how like almost every obscure DS game has a video like that for it.
I mean, you know, it's let's put it this way. That was the first system where you could really, not only could a game touch you, but you could touch it.
Right.
Think about it.
I've sort of been watching Frieren. I'm not up to date. I mostly wanted to say it turns out I've been saying the name wrong this whole time. I thought it was Frieren, and it is Frieren.
Okay. Yeah, I've been watching Frieren pretty religiously since it like debuted.
I remember I'm halfway.
I remember you had like talked up the manga for a while.
Yes. Then, yeah, the manga is very good.
And then, yeah, when I watched the anime, I was just like, whoa, this is great.
Yeah, I'm honestly really surprised by how well it's doing, considering like I don't know anybody that was reading the manga. And like, it must be doing well because like they're still putting it out and, you know, they made an anime of it. They don't make anime of manga that don't get read.
Right.
But it seems that everybody just thinks this anime is a masterpiece, which I guess I agree. I'm not up to date, but I know the story. I assume it's consistently made, so it's probably still good.
Right.
I'm just happy to see like a fantasy series where it's not an isekai. Like this
oh
is
my
just
God. Yes.
Right. You know what I mean?
Like yeah, yeah. Nobody.
As far as I can tell, like stupid RPG stuff where it's like it's actually a video game. Wah, wah.
Yeah, no.
And it's not doing that. Like, oh, I'm living in my. It's just like no, there are elves and people, and there's magic and. Like that is quote unquote fantasy, but it's not trying to, it doesn't have like a stupid hook.
Basically. Yeah. I have never seen Frerin talk about how she needs to get more skill points to learn a new spell. Thankfully.
Yeah. I was thinking recently, like when we started letting fantasy anime do RPG stuff that wasn't a video game, that was a mistake.
Very much so. Correct. Yes.
Cause I like Last Dungeon Boonies, but that's one where like the world is real in the context of that story, but they're still leveling up and talking about final dungeons. Like, what are we yes. doing?
Like, I think I know the absolute worst version of this I've ever seen is when I was watching the first few episodes of Shield Hero and the guy literally opens an options menu and a skill tree in his fucking shield and I was like fuck this.
I can forgive the racism but this is too much. Or I don't know, was it racism? That one had some controversy, but I can't remember.
Oh, slavery, yeah.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Oh, and it had like a false rape allegation, I think, in the first episode.
Yeah, that was like the big thing. It's like why the people don't fuck with him necessarily.
Jesus. yeah, Frerin is good. Whether you read the manga or watch the anime, I don't think you can make a bad choice. I am... maybe 10 episodes in. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll have to keep watching to see like where it is in connection to the manga. I guess what I can say, cause I don't want to spoil too much, but so where I left out in the manga, they had just finished a longer arc where they're like taking a magician's test.
Okay. Well, was it, that's what they're just starting now in the anime.
Okay, so if this, because they're, what, less than 26 episodes right now, so they're probably mm-hmm. going to do about the first 10 volumes.
Okay.
9 or 10 volumes. All right, so cool. All right, what other...
Also, like, I'm noticing, like, people are really into the dub for Frerin, particularly, like, Frerin's, like, English voice, because they like how it's, like, she has a very, like, breathy, mature voice to her. And people are like, oh my gosh, when a bad bitch tell me to do something.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot of manga. I don't know if I want to go super in depth to it. Because like, what am I going to say about Rent-A-Girlfriend? Other than I've shamefully read like 6 volumes of Rent-A-Girlfriend.
So I keep hearing about this and I've yet to like take the plunge. So is it about a guy who like rents a girlfriend, I yes. guess, for like an event or something?
It's what it says on the tin, as I think people in the British say.
And then I guess like he eventually catches feelings for this girl that he rented. Is that what's kinda, going on?
Yeah. So he rents a, I forget why he does it in the first place. I think he's just like bored and sad because he just got broken up with.
Mm.
And then he ends up like his grandma meets the rented girlfriend. And so they have to pretend to still be dating because he doesn't want his grandma to know that he's single. And then it turns out that she lives next door to him, and they also go to college together, but nobody recognizes her when she's not a rental girlfriend because of the Clark Kent rule, I guess. Like, she's one of the most popular rental girlfriends on this service, but nobody recognizes her at college.
Are her classmates at college like renting out girlfriends this often?
Some of them do.
I would figure that's more for older dudes.
Nope. At least one of the friends does rent another girlfriend. This was a joke I made on Blue Sky where I said, like, you know, a lot of people give Puss in Boots credit for having one of the most accurate depictions of a panic attack in animation. But nobody talks about how Rent-A-Girlfriend has the most realistic depiction of jerking off while crying.
This side of Evangelion.
Yeah, fair enough. It's like a 2-page spread or something of this guy like crying while masturbating. It's unbelievable.
I am shocked that Inio Asano didn't get to that first.
I mean, maybe he has. I haven't read everything. I love that you haven't read it when the whole reason I started reading it is because I thought that you were reading it. You have been reading Domestic Girlfriend.
Yes.
Fuck me.
Yeah. Domestic Girlfriend is when...
How could I have made that mistake?
Yeah, Domestic Girlfriend is the guy has sex with a girl, and then 2 days later he finds out that's his new stepsister.
Oh my god! I don't know which one of us is the better person here.
That's me, because I'm reading neither. Get wrecked.
Yeah, fair enough. Rent-A-Girlfriend is almost 20 volumes long and has a spin-off series. It's so crazy. My only, I guess, saving grace is that I'm not paying for it. I'm using K-Manga, so I'm reading it for free. But I can only read one chapter a day because of their fucking ticket system.
Ooh.
Which I guess makes it worse because it means I keep coming back.
Yeah. Like, why do so many of these other manga apps suck ass?
Oh my god. Like, K-Manga is one of the worst I've used. The only reason I'm using it is because they took Eden Zero away from my boy, Evan Mento. And so I want to read Eden Zero and I don't have a choice. I have to go through K-Manga. Every time you open K-Manga on your computer, you have to go through the yes, I'm 18, yes, I won't sue you checkbox.
Yes.
What's really frustrating is that you have to buy tokens, which is fine. I'd rather just use dollars, but you use tokens. Even though I have an account, tokens do not sync on devices. So I can only buy things on my desktop because that's where I bought my tokens. They Holy don't show shit. Up on the app even when I'm logged in, but my chapters do. That's what's crazy. And you'd think, well, why not just buy tokens on the app? It wouldn't let me. So I have to go on the browser to buy my chapter of Eden Zero every week, but then I read it on my iPad. Eden Zero is almost done. It's been running for 5 or 6 years. I think it's pretty neat. It's not, you know, the best, but if you like Hiro Mashima, I'd say it's just as good as anything else he's read. Take that however you will take it. If you like his stuff, you'll like Eden Zero. If you hate his stuff, you'll hate Eden Zero.
Yeah, and I think he's working on like a new manga.
Yes, it's called like, Dead Rock.
Yeah.
And it's just like a demon high school thing. I don't have enough tickets to read that one, so I'm not very many chapters in. That one's about killing God.
Cool.
So it's that's what Mazinger's about, I think. Or yes. Get a Robo.
Either one, take your pick.
But yeah, Eden Zero. I don't want to say too much about it because like they just did this big reveal. But if you liked it, the first anime, actually there's two anime out of it now, two seasons. If you like the anime, I think you'll like the manga. The stakes just keep getting raised as you would in a shonen. They've introduced time travel and parallel worlds.
Cool.
So that's something I didn't just expect. Just like everything else. Just like the MCU.
Yeah, you know what? Shoot, yeah. Like, no, now that I stop and think about it, yeah, that is a prevalent thing in Hiro Mashima manga. Because, like, I feel like the Rave Master did that as
the fairy tale. Oh, they go back in time in Rave Master?
Yes, they do.
I never finished Rave Master. I started a reread. I'm three volumes in on a reread.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's very good. And it became more than just Space One Piece. Because they
I'm very happy to hear that.
Because they actually found the One Piece.
Cool.
No spoilers. I don't want to. I want to go back to One Piece.
Turns out Eden Zero, the end of Eden Zero is just spoiling One Piece.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say that they don't have the One Piece in One Piece.
Man, what a shocker. I guess I don't need to read either one now.
They haven't found the One Piece yet.
Any other manga you guys want to talk about?
Let's see.
It's been light on manga for me, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still reading Blood on the Tracks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I am six volumes in, I think.
Okay.
There's like 13 out right now, at least.
15.
Okay.
See, I'm just furious because I went on a vacation when we were on break from the pod, and I brought my iPad with my manga on it and the app, and I was all prepared, and I get there and genuinely I didn't update it or something like the day before we left, and I didn't have Wi-Fi the whole trip, and for God knows what reason, it was like, you can't access us without getting the latest update. And I just had to go the whole trip with my, tantalizingly close.
They were like, tough shit, no manga for you. Oh, yeah. I've also been reading The Two of Them Are Pretty Much Just Like This. It's this Yuri manga about a screenwriter who starts dating this up and coming voice actress.
That sounds mildly familiar.
Yeah, it's like Gravitation, but like nobody gets assaulted. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, like, you know. Yeah, because it's just about like this girl just breaking into the voice acting world, and her partner is this lady screenwriter who writes for like visual novels and anime and shit.
Where could I read that?
It is like out in print from Seven Seas, and then I do not know like where else it is, like where they usually put up Seven Seas stuff digitally. Would that be
I don't know.
Like Evan Minto thing?
Possibly. That's what is like, I'm having the reverse problem as the streaming issue, in that like I wish everybody had their own app, but they don't, because I've gotten so spoiled by Viz and I guess to a lesser extent Kodansha. So now when I find a manga I want to read but don't want to buy the book, I like can't. You know, like, oh, you know, I'm interested in this, but not enough to buy this $15 book. But I would, you know, pay for their $10 a month streaming and just read all the volumes. So anyway. I've been playing some video games. I've been playing a game called Lords of the Fallen, which there's two of them of the exact same name. One of them is 2014 and one of them just came out.
Mm. Isn't one of them like Lord of the Fallen and one is Lords with an S?
Possibly.
I think that's what it is. Like one is plural. It's different.
Well, I'm playing the 2014 one and it's just poopy Dark Souls. It is literally just Dark Souls, but not as well made. And that is why I bought it. I saw it come up because people were talking about Palworld, which I know almost nothing about. But
that's a Pokemon clone.
Yes. Yeah. So the reason... So
how do we get to Dark Souls?
Because somebody was like, well, if Palworld is a Pokemon clone, then Lord of the Fallen is a Dark Souls clone. And I was
which
like,
it totally is.
And I was like, ooh, Dark Souls clone. So I looked it up. I'm like, okay, yeah, I do want to play. It's almost the exact same control scheme. The world's not as interesting. You are playing as... I don't remember the name of the guy in God of War, but you're just him, Kratos. You're just Kratos, but like a human. But it just looks like Kratos, but not.
Yeah, I remember when the game first came out. I think I was still working at GameStop, and I looked at the cover, and I was just like, "Yeah, this is just not Kratos staring at you."
It's fun enough. So it does, there's a few really interesting things that it does. So, you know, it's the same concept of when you kill an enemy, you collect their essence or whatever, and you use that to level up. But something that Lord of Fallen does is there's a multiplier. So every time you kill an enemy, the multiplier adds up. So, you know, it starts off as 1x, then will become like 1.1x, then 1.25x. And so, you know, if you keep killing enemies before resting at a checkpoint, you could get up, I think it's up to a 2x multiplier on your experience, which is a cool change.
That's a nice incentive to stay alive.
Yeah. Well, not even just to stay alive, to just like keep going instead of resting at a checkpoint, because you said that's when it resets?
That's when it resets. The thing that annoys me is, so when you die, you can still go and collect your essence or whatever, souls, but if you don't get to it in time, it disappears. And in Dark Souls, it's just always there. In this, it slowly decreases. It starts off at 100%, it goes all the way down to 0%, depending on how long it takes you to find it. And sometimes it's really, like, these maps are not as well laid out, so it's really easy to get lost. So I've lost 7,000 souls before, and that feels pretty bad.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I've died with a lot of souls in a like Bloodborne semi-recently, and there was much pain.
Yeah, it's fun enough. It was only $20. I've played it for maybe 50 hours now, so if I don't play it anymore, I've gotten my money's worth. I'm told that the new one is just poopy Elden Ring. So I may check that out if and when I get a PS5, which is a great segue into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I think Kyle's the only one with a PS5. Will you be playing this game?
Oh, yeah. I plan on, because I've beat Final Fantasy VII, the original game, on PlayStation 1 recently in anticipation of getting into the remake and then the new Rebirth. Very excited.
Yeah, that's the end of the month, I think.
So yeah, I've got a lot of catching up to do.
I've got 20 days to afford a PS5, which I think I could do. My taxes should come back in the next week or so.
Yeah.
I know, Noel, you also want to play this, but we're in the same position where we do not have a PS5. I'm a little salty that it's an exclusive.
I mean, because it's going to be a lot better for it being an exclusive, though.
Like, I assume better optimized, because they don't have to think about more than one platform.
Well, I mean, like, when the original remake came out for, you know, the first part of Final Fantasy VII Remake, there were a lot of issues for it being a PS4 game, like hard trouble, like loading things, you know, like super long load times, like loading issues, like just like stuff that will literally not exist with it being the PS5 and an SSD. Not to mention the graphical upgrade and stuff. Like, I, as someone who owns a PS5 and doesn't want like a slightly, you know what I mean? Like, we turned the shadow setting from very high to ultra high. You're welcome. Because this is a PS4 game. It's like, no, this is going to be a true, like, next-gen Final Fantasy VII. I'm down for that. But I am sorry that the two of you need to make some acquisitions to make it happen. I am sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't until pretty recently that you could even buy one of the damn things.
Right.
I didn't see one in person until a few months ago. So when I had the money to buy one, I couldn't. Well, I wasn't willing to pay scalper prices. That's what I'll say.
Well, you could. You just had to like basically follow like Wario 64 or one of the other video game tracking websites when stock, you know. But like that's how it's been for years for all these consoles, though.
Yeah, but now I can just go to Best Buy.
For a long time.
I could just go poke one right now if I wanted to.
For real. Yeah.
Super Mario RPG Remake. I did play most of that. I have been kind of picking at it little by little because I've played Super Mario RPG so many times that, you know, like.
Oh, so you're a fan of the original. I didn't know that.
I have played the original a lot. I played the original when it came out.
You know what? I never played the original. I've played like Mario RPGs before, like the Paper Marios and the Marios and Luigis, but never this. And so, yeah, this was my first experience with it.
I am really interested on your feelings then, because you don't have nostalgia clouding your judgment.
You know, I had fun with it. Something I'm kind of surprised about is, see, I always heard people talk about like, oh man, Chino's so cool, and why isn't Chino in Smash? And I'm just like, and I'm playing the game and I'm like, Chino is a good like party member by like in battle wise, but like his character, I'm not seeing too much about him. Now Mallow, that guy's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, this may be controversial to say, but for me, Chino is great until you get Bowser, and then I never
knew him again. Well, my usual team was Mario, Bowser, and Chino.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I'm a Mario, Bowser, and Peach guy.
Okay.
What I'll do, and this is kind of cheating because I've just been playing this game for so long that I know where everything is. There's a special armor that you can get. I want to say it's called the Lazy Shell, and it makes you almost indestructible. So you put that on Peach, and then you have an unkillable white mage, which makes your party pretty much unbeatable because you can always just revive them.
Nice.
And so that's how I beat the game the last time I played. So you did beat the game?
Yeah.
I guess, for me, like, the game was always fun in, like, the secrets and stuff, like, finding the casino and, like, going to Yoshi's Island. Did you do any of that stuff?
I did go to Yoshi's Island. I tried doing some races, and I kept getting, like, smoked in those races.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the controller or what, but the timing for the race in this is messed up.
Oh, okay.
Because it is not that hard to win in the original game, and I just did it until I got it, and I think that the, like, maybe it's because it's a wireless controller or
maybe
something.
Yeah.
It does not work the way that it should.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they fixed that in a patch.
So you're not a fan of the input lag?
I don't know, man. Like, I always won the race in the original game. I mean, other than the very first time I ever did it. But, like, once you know the mechanics, it's easy to win the race. But, like, it just, like, no matter how in time with the music you are on this one, Toad will tell you that you're not doing it right. Did you find the casino?
The casino I did not find. Actually, did I? Shoot. Yeah,
so, no. There is... So you fight the clown characters in Booster's Tower. If you go back... This is like stupid esoteric knowledge that I only know because I looked it up. If you go back to Booster's Tower, which you'd have no reason to do that otherwise, one of the clowns is hanging out in a stairwell, and you have to play this game with him like 50 times. and he'll give you a pass to the casino. And I forget exactly where that is, but I think you need to get pretty deep into the game to find it. Mm. I think you need to get at least to Mallow's to beat the Mallow Kingdom thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When you go up to Cloud City and you meet like Mallow's parents and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you need the seed and the fertilizer to get to the casino. I can't. Mm. Somebody will tell me the right answer. Yeah, for the most part, the remake's really good. There's a few really weird changes that they made. Like they've changed some character names, and I think a few dialogue changes were made. Mm. Oh, the other thing, the timed hits are a little easier to do in the original game. So yeah, just really? timing like moves. Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like the timing was like really easy in this one.
I got it after a while, but I don't hit it.
Well, part of the issue you have is you played the original so much that you probably have a lot of that muscle memory and your expectation. But like, you know, that's just digital consoles are not going to have the same response time as old analog. Unfortunately. So this might just be like your nostalgia literally is hurting that.
Yeah, that aspect. Might be what it is. I like that they added super moves. The cutscenes I'm mixed on. There was a few parts where the cutscenes like replaced like an on-screen event.
Hmm.
Like in Booster's Tower. In the original game, you have to bash the door down with Bowser, but I'm pretty sure in the remake, he just does it in a cutscene.
Hmm. Oh, God.
Anyway. Kyle, do you have any thoughts on Super Mario RPG? I know that you didn't play the remake, but you've played the original.
Yeah, I just got the remake, but I haven't played it yet. I will say that I don't, as someone who's only recently played, like within the last few years, like 2 or 3 years, I played the original RPG for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the visuals aged that badly. I'm just going to be real. I do think that the remake is pretty like faithful in terms to like not necessarily like the tone of how the original looks, but like the actual models. Like it doesn't look that different, quote unquote, if you're talking about like literally. But I think that cumulatively, like it's almost like a new color grade on a film or something where you're like, oh, like this feels different, even if like on paper it doesn't seem that different. So it's a weird remake in that instance where it's like I could see people being turned off by like short, stubby Mario.
Yeah.
Because like that to me, I'm like, oh, like I don't know. I, as someone who grew up with 3D Mario, like, you know, in Mario 64, it's not like he gets hit and he turns into short, stubby Mario. Like, I genuinely do not like seeing like the little short, like, you know, like one block high Mario that you see in like the 2D games in 3D. Like, that makes me uncomfortable.
Where are my short kings?
Yeah. I love me a snubby Mario. I think that
it is cool for, I do know a lot of people who, you know, are unwilling to go to any retro games or any retro movies for that example. So I get why it exists and I'm happy that they did it. Yeah. That's all I have to say about it.
It's really good. And I would say with the exception of a few minor wording changes, it is almost a one-to-one faithful remake. I think that they changed a few things that referenced existing properties. So like in the original game, the knife that you fight in the first to get the first star is named Mac the Knife. Well, that's Bobby Darin's song. So now they call him like Clay Morton, I think is what they changed his name to.
Oh, okay.
And like Mallow references Bruce Lee in the original game. They took that reference out.
Mm.
I guess the only other thing I'll say is there's so many characters in this that I now finally know what they look like, because just in the old pixelated version, some of the monster textures weren't always obvious. So like I never knew that Jinx was a little guy in a cape. I always thought he was a grasshopper. It's so funny that he's a little guy in a cage. Kind of ruins my nostalgia.
That's big SNES. Right. It's like what is it? Link to the Past. The villain looks like he has like a little pouty like duck face, but that's actually just his helmet or something.
Yeah.
I feel you.
I've been watching a lot of TV. I don't need to go super in depth with this stuff. The new season of Rick and Morty came out. I guess, you know, another love it or hate it series. I just wanted to briefly touch on, I think the new voice actors did a really good job. They replaced Justin Roiland because of the court case and allegations that came out. It took a little bit of growing. The first episode felt kind of rough, but now by the end of it, I had forgotten they changed.
Yeah, the first episode really feels like they're just doing impressions, but like, yeah, once we get further along, they start to grow into their own with the characters. Yeah.
I honestly, without getting into spoilers, I thought this season had some of my favorite episodes in a while.
Oh, okay. Now, have you ever seen Solar Opposites?
I have not. I know they changed voices in that, but didn't they just get a totally different guy?
They got a totally different guy, and then they have like a lore reason for why his voice is different, which is nice. Really hilarious. Cause was it like he gets a dart thrown into his neck and then, yeah, and then they like zap him with like a ray that like fixes the hole in his throat, but it makes his voice completely different.
That's funny.
And then they're like, yeah, by the way, the ray gun had time crystals in it, so now he's gonna sound like that in flashbacks too, whatever.
That's funny.
Yeah.
There was no lore. They just got sound-alikes in Rick and Morty,
right?
But yeah, I really liked the last episode, the Fear Hole.
Oh yeah. Fear Hole was actually really good.
And they also did more of the kind of ongoing evil Morty plotline. I really liked that episode. And I'm trying to think. There was at least one other that was really good. The one where Jerry and Rick fuse bodies was really good.
Yeah.
What else have I been watching? My New Adventures with Superman, or whatever that was called. We haven't podcasted in so long that a whole ass show.
Yes, a whole Superman show happened. People were like, oh my God, how dare they make Lois Lane super hot? This is a travesty.
That show, I don't even like Superman, but I would stay up every week to watch the show. Originally, I think it was just like on, but I got so into it that it became appointment viewing for me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I don't really know how to talk about superhero stuff, so I don't know how to like properly. I just liked it. It reminded me of Batman the Animated Series a lot. Mm. I don't know. I guess it was just like a fresh take on superhero stuff. It felt very... I don't know, like they weren't worried about catering to any specific demographic. They just sat down and said, like, let's just make a good show.
Right.
Like, it wasn't too inside baseball. I was able to watch this as somebody that really knows almost nothing about Superman. Like, I know who Superman and Lois Lane are. That is it. Mm,
right. My only complaint with the show is, like, I wasn't a big fan of how, like, all the villains he runs into like all have this shared connection of like, oh, they picked up a like Krypton weapon and that's why they can do the things that they do. Cause like originally, like the first one he fights, Livewire, like, yeah, she has no connection with like any Kryptonian weapons. Originally, she just got zapped by lightning one night and became like a sick lightning supervillain.
I need to revisit the first two episodes. Those were the ones where I was half watching.
Okay.
I got really invested maybe about four episodes in.
Ah.
That's when they started to, I think, get more into the like Lois and Clark dynamic.
Mm.
And I think that's around the time where his friends find out that he's Superman. But yeah, it's a great show. It's on Max if you want to watch it. They haven't, to my knowledge, done a repeat session on Adult Swim yet. It was really weird. They had it on at midnight.
Right.
Every Thursday. And it feels like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Very much so. Like, there is nothing in that show that could justify airing it at midnight.
I had read somewhere what the reasoning for that was. I think originally this had been planned as a streaming-only thing. Maybe aimed at a younger demographic. And then last minute, they got put on Adult Swim late at night, and they were so far into production that they just kind of went with it. So my understanding is that, I hate to say this because this has such a bad connotation, but that season two will be grittier.
Oh no, don't do it.
Because now they know that they have a midnight adult audience.
Oh no.
So Superman is gonna say fuck.
Yeah.
No, Superman will fuck.
Oh God! If only.
I mean, that's you're not thinking high enough.
He's got to go to the Lois Lane planet and fuck all the Lois Lanes.
There we go.
It'll be the joke, you know, about like, oh, you know, Superman kills Lois Lane, and he has to go back in time to fix that.
Oh no. The other thing I wanted to talk about very briefly is a show on Netflix called Brand New Cherry Flavor. This is one of the craziest shows I've ever seen. Crazier, more so by the fact that it's based on a book you can't buy.
What?
I don't know how this happened, but they got rights to a book that's out of print. And they've only adapted like one third of the book. So unless they make another season, I'm never going to find out how this show ends. It's about this.
Hey, that's one way to avoid spoilers,
I guess. It's about this woman that moves to Hollywood to get her short film turned into a feature. And she does get a deal, and the guy that buys her film screws her over because she like turns down his advance to get busy with her. So she hires a witch to curse him.
Nice.
And like it's kind of unclear in the beginning, like, you know, is this real or not? But through the course, I think it's like seven episodes. They're like pretty long episodes. I want to say they're like hour long episodes. This guy's life just gradually gets more and more miserable. I won't go into detail how it gets miserable, because that's part of what makes it fun, is just how weird and creative it gets. But something that is a continuing theme throughout the entire, not theme, a continuing thing throughout the whole series, is the woman's payment to this witch is that she throws up cats. Like, gives birth to kittens through her mouth, and then a zombie comes and picks up the cats to bring them back to the witch. It is so gross, and that's not even the grossest thing that happens in the show.
Reverse boar is the least disgusting thing.
Oh my God. Yes, I will not say what happens, because I experienced it on my own and it was the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in a TV show. So just be aware of that. This is a really gross show, but it's a lot of fun. It's really fucking weird. Cronenberg-esque has been thrown around in reviews. Yeah, it's like seven or eight episodes, a lot of fun, but just not for the faint of heart. Just watch this guy's life go up in flames, sometimes literally. Yeah, Brand New Cherry Flavor, very fun. What do we got? We've been going for about an hour and probably 10 minutes, give or take. Did you guys want to talk about, we had a couple movies and then we could wrap it up. Kyle, you watched Boy and the Heron?
Yeah, I know that you, it's funny because I thought you would have seen Boy and the Heron because it's, you know, it's the new Ghibli film. Miyazaki is back, baby. You know, for the first time, for the last time, unretired.
Yeah. I'm not a big Miyazaki guy, but I haven't seen the good ones. I've seen Howl's and Wind Rises, and I really didn't care for Wind Rises.
Oh, well, Wind Rises is my, I think, his best film. I still wish that was his closing, but I will say that Boy and the Heron, so I guess I should preface this by saying that when I was first discovering Ghibli, it was, you know, it was like my first anime. That's how I got into anime way back. And I binged the hell out of those, like insane, because I was the one like showing them to friends and blah, blah, blah. And I did it to the point where I really, I haven't been able to watch them since, really. Like, I think the last time I watched most of the Ghibli films was on DVD, despite owning the Blu-rays. Outside of the ones that I've seen in cinema since. Like, but I haven't watched my home collection versions. So, which is to say, I haven't really come at a Ghibli film recently with kind of my modern, you know, film sense. And seeing it, like Miyazaki here, I don't know if it's like just like the peak of his powers in terms of animation, or if this has always been a thing in Ghibli. In that sense, I'm like interested in going back. But the one detail I came away with is the way Miyazaki animates people's wardrobes as being so separate from their bodies is maybe the most exciting thing I've seen in animation. Like, it's not flashy in the way that like a lot of anime does with quick cuts and, you know, just like short, you know, like simple frames of quick movement. But in every animated piece I've like from any country, you could say from, you know, East or West, I think that there's this tendency to just conflate people as being like, or rather people are, or characters are just their wardrobes. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like if a character is flashy and they're wearing a jacket, like you can't really get the sense of like, oh, like, you know, it's the same thing that like Shaggy and Scooby do. Like, they're always going to wear the same outfits, right? Like every episode. And like, that's just how it works, right? We just kind of accept that.
Yeah.
And there's this form of, I guess, conflation between the two. And it's a simple shorthand that I think it's easy for the animators to kind of fall into. But like in The Boy and the Heron, I just like could not get over the fact that scene after scene, you would see characters. And I was like, oh, it's just, to me, it's like so aware, or Miyazaki is so aware that the clothing that that people wear is like made by a person in that world. And it's a thing that like they put on. So in every scene, even when it's nature, like everything is so distinct from one another. It's like, oh, this is a house. And that was a thing that was put here. And the trees are put here. And like, you get the sense almost that like, oh, like this is a feeling, I think, in The Boy and the Heron, where you kind of feel like, oh, this all began as like maybe a simple drawing. And they just went from the bottom of it all the way up to the top layer. And that's how every frame feels like it was drawn. And that's a really special thing, I think. And I will say that going to like the plot, which is the thing that most people are probably coming away with, it is, I would say it's probably like the most allegorical Ghibli work. And that it finishes and there's a lot of question of like, oh, like, what does this stand for? And I get the sense that like to Miyazaki, everything has like a particular meaning. But, and that there's a lot to unpack, I think, to kind of go like what happened, but, from an animation standpoint and from just, it's a very unusual Ghibli project. And, I think you both should try to watch it whenever you get the chance.
You know, another anime where the clothing is real, Eden Zero. That's almost not a joke. It's one of the few manga and anime where they're wearing a different outfit in like every other chapter.
Well, it's not just specifically that they're wearing different outfits. It's like how they're animated on them. There's like a character at one point who is very frail, and she's getting off of a rickshaw and she steps off. And even though she's shown as like very dainty and like sickly and kind of delicate in a sickly kind of way, but despite every other character around her being, you know, with these, wearing these like big Western style suits, which are very large on them, she's wearing a, you know, this very slim Japanese kimono, but on her frame, it still feels like a heavy garment.
Oh yeah, I understand what you mean.
Like, and that's how every character is drawn in that film. Like, I was just, I've never seen characters move within clothing in the way in which, and like, and that's every shot of every scene. You almost get this in the Western style, right? Like, and Disney, like, they animate on a character basis. Like, there will be like first Winnie the Pooh animator and second Winnie the Pooh animator, and like everyone is just drawing their own parts, and that's very different from the Eastern system, where like a animator, like there might be the background guy, but then like, you know, the animators are kind of drawing all of the things within their particular scene. Like, you almost get the sense watching it that like, oh, there was like a word, there was like an, like almost like they, like, it feels almost like someone drew the people and then someone came on after and drew just the wardrobe on top of like the skeletons.
Nice.
It's very strange and very unique.
Well, it's
interesting.
One of the first times in God knows how long that Anime News Network didn't get to say no anime was nominated for an Oscar. So it must be a good movie.
Right.
Decent odds too, because it won the Golden Globes. Nice. I think, which is unusual. Like, I think it's the first time anything anime has ever won a Golden Globe. So
sick.
I'm just saying, I hope Disney loses this year. Shit.
You watched a movie called Iron Claw?
Oh yeah, yeah. So so Iron Claw is like the autobiographical story of a biographical about this wrestling family from the 80s and the early 90s. They were called the Von Erichs, and the patriarch of that family was a dude named Fritz Von Erich. He was like a big name in pro wrestling in the 70s. And I want to say like the late 60s. And his whole character was that he was like a big old wrestling Nazi.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so he founded this territory called World Class Championship Wrestling over in Texas. And the movie is basically about his sons kind of growing up and them becoming wrestlers. And it's just like, it's this tragic story of like how most of them kind of fucking die.
Jesus.
Because, you know, just various circumstances and like, you know, like unlucky circumstances and them kind of killing themselves for their father's approval. Cause it's like, yeah, it's cause like, was it Zac Efron? He plays like one of the older brothers, this guy named, Cary Von Erich, who is still alive to Kevin Von Erich. I'm sorry. Who's still alive to this day. And the movie's kind of from his perspective. And it just shows how he's like, how he starts off wrestling and how he gets like, he gets the big shot to win like the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, which at the time was like the top championship in America. Like the WWF had not become what it is today yet. So it was like all about the NWA championship, and he kind of falls flat on that. Like they decide to not go forward with putting the belt on him, and that kind of makes his dad just sort of like go whatever and move on to the next son. Mm. Yeah, and with that next son, he does like a tour over in Japan, and he fucking dies. Cause he had like something going on with where he got this really serious infection, but he just didn't get it treated. Cause he's like, fuck, I got to go to Japan. I can't miss a date. Cause my dad told me I got to make this fucking date. And yeah.
Jesus.
Yep. And like it's, it is like this harrowing movie, but also like it's this story about like, you know, these four brothers and how like they care about one another and just how like seeing each of them just fucking fall off is really kind of sad, especially for like Kevin. And yeah, but yeah, it is like a great movie. And what's his name? The dude from The Bear.
Nice. Oh, the main character.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in there. He plays this guy, Cary Von Erich, who like his whole story was kind of fucked up because he was gonna be an Olympian. He did like Olympic shot put, but then I want to say because this was like there was some situation where the U.S. pulled out of the Olympics that year. So he ended up having to go back home. I want to say this is 1982 or something.
Jesus.
Yeah. So he ends up wrestling. He actually gets pretty far along. He actually wins the NWA championship. So he gets like his father's praise for that. And then he gets into a motorcycle accident where they had to amputate his leg. And the scene that they show this is crazy because it's like it shows him riding his motorcycle late at night and that just cuts to him waking up in bed on a later day. And like you do not see his legs for a considerable amount of time until you see him go into the fridge and you see like, whoa, he's missing a leg. And seeing it in theaters was crazy because it's just like, you hear the people gasp because they did not realize that part about his story.
Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast or if it was before we started recording, but I'm reading a manga called King of Limbo, which is about these people fighting a pandemic. And that happens to one of the characters. It's in like the first chapter. So this isn't really a spoiler.
Okay. It's
what kicks off the entire story is that this guy's like a cop who loses his leg and they want to keep him on the force. So they put him in the special dream unit. That's nice. What King of Limbo is about, people that get struck with a dream sickness that kills them. So he becomes a psycho diver.
Psycho. Nice.
Yeah. As you do.
But yeah, which one of the craziest things about this movie and about just like the story in general is, yeah, so since Cary loses his leg, what they end up doing is they give him like a prosthetic, and then everybody, his like family and those who are close to his family, are sworn to secrecy that like nobody mentions that Cary has like a fake leg so that he can continue wrestling.
Oh my God.
And like nobody knew this for years until like
this really happened.
This is all a true story. Yeah, this really happened. How do
you fight with your leg not falling off?
I don't know. Like, cause yeah, like you have people who like this is revealed to. Like, I've seen documentaries where they go, like, I did not know he was missing a leg until somebody told me. He wrestled then better than most guys I know who have two legs. Yeah, it's this crazy thing. Never
get a sharpshooter to him.
Right, but yeah.
Wow. Well, I think we should wrap it up. Kyle has to get to work. And
of course, yeah.
Blame it all on me.
Well, we went on a little longer than I intended, which is fine. I realized through the recording, because I was trying to make the outline, like, oh, what have I been up to? And I forgot that I watched all of Buffy and Angel. That's like 200 hours of television that I forgot about. So maybe next time we'll talk about that.
Sick.
Angel's so good. If you haven't watched Angel, it's excellent. Anyway, this has been Dead Rat Pizza. I don't know how often we're going to be doing this, but I want to at least semi regularly be doing pods again. I needed a break because I was just like overworked, I guess. I don't know why I took a break, but I had a lot going on, and now I'm back in a place where I need an outlet for all the dumb shit I'm doing. Oh, you know what I think it was? I had to run an anime con, and I was super burnt out from that. That was my mistake.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I took a week off and then a second week off, and then we never came back, and I didn't get pressed to Anime NYC, which surprised. Anyway, so thank you for listening. I guess if you want, you could follow us on Blue Sky. Anybody listening to this probably already is. Technically, we're still on Twitter. I only lurk there. But if you want to follow me, you can. It's gonzo.moe. I'm still that on Blue Sky. You could follow my band. Noel, I don't know what your Blue Sky is.
Shoot. I think, let me pull it up.
I know you're in my friends list.
Yeah. I'm on Blue Sky. I just do not post there as often. I should, yeah. Because like I'm constantly complaining about how Twitter is dog shit now. But
oh, my God. Yeah. So every time I go on there, I get bombarded with like right-wing propaganda now.
I'm just waiting for Elon Musk to be ousted and for them to revert every single stupid fucking change that he has instituted there, which is every single decision he has made.
I don't think that's going to happen, though. He bought the company. Like, right. Jack is...
No, he's lost so much value. There's a decent chance that he gets pushed off the board.
Yeah,
and because he doesn't have the money to like own it. It might, literally might get like repossessed.
At this point,
that is a feasible thing that could happen.
Well, I wonder if it's even worth it. Like, right. Would you buy Twitter?
Not at all.
No, it wouldn't be the people. He got a loan to buy Twitter.
Sure.
The people who own his loan might go, you're done. Your value was Twitter. You've destroyed so much value. We're taking it back so it doesn't lose more. And then they'll just revert. I mean, that's like the dream at this point.
Yeah.
Because we are living in the nightmare that Elon Musk has created.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, with me, not so much. My thing with Twitter is that, like, I'll open it and I'm bombarded by anime posts that are just like, oh, man, could Frieren low-diff Goku, though? But, yeah, it's... My Blue Sky is a... Noel is a man's name.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Kyle, you're probably New Type Century on there, right? Same.
That's me. A New Type Century .bsky.social. That's me.
Well, we will see everybody next time. Good night.
Yeah, good night.